There was some crazy planning progress made last week in Minnesota and Iowa. And today, a lot of those newly planted fields are getting a rain. In fact, by the end of the next 24 hours, there's going to be a rain delay over much of the Corn Belt. Unfortunately, that includes some already soggy areas in the Northern Plains, too.
Live from under the stairs via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Sean Kennedy from the National Restaurant Association. Then it's Tanner Emke from CoBank. And then we'll talk with Lindsay Pullen as she farms on. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm Hanson Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory!
Hey, Davis. Hey, you sound buddy. Great from under the stairs this morning.
Yeah.
I like the new location. It's got a stronger signal.
The Tuesday squirrel is a much stronger runner on the little wheel thingy is what it is. I was trying out a new guy yesterday. It just didn't.
Did not work.
Yeah. Back to the tree with you, little fella. Back to the tree.
Oh, man. We've got some rains rolling across Iowa, Minnesota right now. They're going to continue to make their way to the east. And there's a second wave that's going to kind of circle back in and come. We'll get on the backside of this system again, too, later this afternoon, Davis. So who knows? We might end up out of this with some really nice rains after some really impressive planting progress over the last week in the middle of the country.
Wow. I mean, the ground working up so nice for most people. Now rain comes at just the right time for those that just got some seed put in. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, my attitude going into the crop progress and condition report from USDA yesterday afternoon would be that the planting progress reported would be behind reality. Okay.
Right.
And then I saw the numbers and I thought, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
27% for the country, 39% corn planting progress for Iowa, 40% for Minnesota. And I was thinking, well, but after talking with some guys last night, Davis, I'm telling you, I think it is light. I think it is light. We are probably
even
closer
still.
To, we're probably closer to 35 than 25% done across the country with corn planting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So big time progress already made. All right. We've got a little bit of pressure going on in the corn market, soybean market, wheat market is mixed now. It was lower earlier. We've got some strength, some impressive strength in the lean hog trade. Cattle are trying to figure out which way they should be going from here. Okay, man, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, let's see here. Oh, ethanol advocates are urging President Trump to send aid to the lagging ethanol industry, saying more than half of U.S. ethanol production capacity has been shuttered as a result of social distancing and the related lack of fuel demand. In a letter to the president, American Coalition for Ethanol head Brian Jennings said, quote, "Now is the time your leadership in support of America's farmers and the renewable fuels sector can help cut through bureaucratic red tape and respond to the mounting economic harm." He said the administration has tools that can be deployed with the necessary political will. Is it a question of political will here, Chip?
Well, I think it is when we talk about that there could also be some efforts to support the oil industry. So there is going to be some political conflict that comes along with anything that is done to support the ethanol industry.
Well, and speaking of oil, crude oil prices continue to slide, and watchers suggest the June contract could fall into negative territory. The West Texas Intermediate contract for June delivery fell 18% to $10.45 per barrel in London action and follows a 25% plunge in the price on the same contract yesterday. Volatility in crude markets has been exacerbated by exchange-traded funds, and currently right now, June crude oil off 39 cents on the day, $12.39, July at $18.31, Chip.
Yeah. We've got to get closer to the actual expiration date for that for the June contract before we can really be concerned about any movement into negative territory again, I think.
That's 20 days away, I believe.
Okay.
The Senate and House will return on Monday, May 4, after an extended recess amid the coronavirus pandemic. That's according to Senate Majority Leader McConnell. McConnell said the Senate will modify its routines but will not try to legislate long distance anymore, saying, quote, "We will honor our constitutional duty to the American people and conduct critical business in person."
I think this is important. Yeah. I think this is important because we're starting to build some momentum around reopening. We can do it safely.
Right.
We need to follow the guidelines, and getting the lawmakers back into D.C. is part of that process.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. coronavirus case count is closing in on 1 million at 988,469 and the death total at 56,253. Chip, worldwide, the number of infections is more than 3 million, with around 211,000 deaths attributed to the disease. Now, Chip, as slaughterhouses struggle with coronavirus-related shutdowns, hog producers are faced with the possibility of euthanizing market-ready animals, and regulators are discussing the possibility of compensation for the lost stock. Iowa Secretary of Ag Mike Nag said, quote, "It's not yet widespread, but there is widespread planning." Yeah. As coronavirus outbreaks close major processing plants, euthanasia is seen in some cases as the most humane option. Meanwhile, Tyson Foods took out a full-page ad in major newspapers, bringing attention to the faltering food supply chain. And just a real quick note here, since mid-March, China's Ministry of Ag and Rural Affairs has reported a spate of new cases of African swine fever across the country, supporting claims from independent vets and farming consultants that the disease is still a problem. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to talk about the faltering food supply chain with Tanner Emke coming up here in just a little bit. All right. All right. Let's bring in Annalisa Laca. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk, joins us right now. Annalisa, challenging time for the dairy producers, but what some of those producers are helping to lift the spirits and provide some nutrition, some cheap nutrition for some needy families out there is really impressive.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see. You know, it wasn't just 2 weeks ago that everything felt like just a lot of despair in the dairy industry. And this week feels a lot brighter. I mean, we're seeing not only are the co-ops working together to donate large amounts of fluid milk and cheese to food banks, but also farmers on their local level are setting up like drive-throughs where members of the community can come to get free milk. We're seeing that actually that's going to happen this week in our town. There's a farmer here who processes and bottles some of his own milk, and he is just anyone in the community can come get 2 gallons of free milk. Yeah, so I think it's awesome to see that going on. I think it, you know, anytime that you give feels really good, particularly when things are hard. So I think it's good for everybody.
Yeah, Brian Winnikins up at WRDN in Durand, Wisconsin, has been keeping me up to speed with what is happening in West Central Wisconsin with some of the cheese donations there, Annalisa. Thousands and thousands of servings of cheese being provided.
Yeah, the one that I saw that I thought was super cool is that one of the cheese processors up there sent home 2 pounds of shredded mozzarella cheese with every school lunch, to make sure that families have mozzarella cheese. I mean, I just think it's really cool. And we're seeing some, you know, some creameries are donating cheese to pizza places that are giving out, like, make-at-home pizza kits. I mean, just lots of innovation happening, which
Very cool. Annalisa, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Chip. Bye.
We got Sean Kennedy from the National Restaurant Association up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by ClaraFly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
Diamond rings and no bar stools. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Jim Plory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hey-o.
And we are going to right now welcome back to AgriTalk, Sean Kennedy. Sean is Executive VP for the National Restaurant Association. He joins us right now. Sean, thank you so much for making time for us again.
Chip, thanks. Great to be with you.
Absolutely. Good, good, good. Davis was talking about Congress coming back to work. We see governors making some tentative plans. They're not saying go in most cases. They're not saying go. Let's get back to work. Let's get back to something that resembles pre-COVID-19 life. Yeah, the new normal. Right. Thank you. But you know this. What Congress is doing by coming back to work next week. You're in Washington, right, Sean?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah. And you've been in D.C. for a long time, if I'm not mistaken.
25 years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is important. The those inside of D.C. and the congressmen, and you've worked with congressmen, they understand how important that is to set the right example, don't they?
They do. The biggest challenge that we have right now is, we've got two things that are going on simultaneously. One, Congress is looking at what additional relief, what do they need to be focusing on from a legislative perspective? We have this phase three bill, they called it, that just passed for small businesses a few weeks ago. They're talking about a phase four bill and looking at what industries need help. At the same time, as you noted, we're beginning to see what might be the resumption of full-service restaurants, where you can do dine-in. And what that means is that restaurants have to decide pretty soon, are they financially able to start, and are they strong enough where they can actually open up their doors, order a lot of food, a lot of supplies, bring their staff all back on, and are people actually going to show up and order a steak and a chicken salad?
Right, right. And in some of the cases, be limited to 50% capacity inside of that restaurant.
We are waiting. Different states are taking different approaches on what social distancing is. But, you know, the challenge, Chip, is if you've got a restaurant, your average restaurant's making about 5% profit. If you're cutting things back by 50%, by 40% on how many tables, that's going to make it really tight. And remember, this is an industry that's been basically forced to close for almost 45 days now. Average restaurant's got 15 days of cash on hand. So the clock is really ticking. We need Congress to step in with a specific recovery package aimed at the restaurant industry.
Well, I was just going to ask if it felt like the Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program, if that is going to work to help these restaurants reopen when we do get the green light, Sean, is it? It's going to help, but it's not going to do it, is it?
It's not going to come too close, unfortunately. The way that this Paycheck Protection Program works is it gives you money. It gives businesses money to put their people back onto payroll if they've been furloughed. The problem with the restaurants is we're closed generally.
Right.
So we're bringing in enough staff to operate that takeout and delivery counter, but you know the rest of the servers and the rest of the cooks that we would normally have working the tables, we can't bring them on board yet. What we need is flexibility so we can use that money when we start reopening. Right. Under the rules right now, we have to start using the money now when we're closed. And what gets worse is if we don't use the money, we have to pay it back with interest rates. It becomes yet another loan, yet another debt for a restaurant that really can't afford it when they got a stack of invoices on their desk.
Yeah, Paycheck Protection Program is a stimulus effort. It is to put money in people's hands so that they will continue to spend money, even if it's on takeout, even if it's on whatever they are spending money on right now. It's an effort to keep some activity going in the economy. It's not an effort to save the businesses, although 25% of that money can be used for rent, but it doesn't come close to covering all your fixed costs.
Well, we've got another challenge that Congress also raised unemployment benefits for the laid-off workers. So we have to, and in some states, it's high enough. In Washington State, for instance, if you're making $30 an hour, or less, you're going to get more money by staying on unemployment than coming back to your job. So we could be paying someone $20 an hour, and they are going to say, look, I love my job, but I'm getting a better deal right now for my family. They want to work, but it's in their financial interest. They're making a rational business decision to say, I need to stay on unemployment. If we don't get that worker back on the payroll under this PPP rules, we then that debt we've got, it's not considered a grant, it's considered a loan, and yet it's yet another challenge that this restaurant has got on their desk.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move toward the new normal and get these restaurants back open and operational. What sort of support, what sort of aid is the National Restaurant Association supporting right now?
So right now, what we've seen is there is no industry that has lost more jobs and more revenue than restaurants. Mm-hmm. We are up to 8 million laid off employees from our industry. We've lost $80 billion in sales. As you well know, on that 5% profit margin that we get, that means we're reinvesting 95% of those our revenue back into produce, back into supplies, back into harvested goods. That's money that's not moving up the supply chain. What we need is if the number two largest private sector employer is losing more jobs than anyone else, that needs to be an alarm bell for Congress. What we're asking for is a restaurant recovery fund, a blueprint for recovery, rather, that will allow us to weather this storm with federal support as they respond to a federal crisis. We have a website that offers more details, which is at restaurantsact.com. And if you're interested in saving your local restaurant and making sure it gets the support it needs and you have a cell phone handy, if you could text the word recovery to 52886, it'll put you on a list to make sure that your voice is heard with your electeds in Washington when they come back into town next week.
Text recovery to 52886.
Exactly.
Okay. Here's my concern, Sean, because tell me, there's pent-up demand among consumers out there to go and sit at a restaurant and enjoy a meal, right?
Oh, yeah. They're tired of cooking.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So when we do start to get the green light, if there are some capacity restrictions and they have to not only be a host and police the situation as well to stay within the guidelines, that consumers just have to understand, listen, you need to get back when you're ready, get back into those restaurants, but at the same time, understand some of the restrictions that they might be facing.
It's going to be a little different. I think the first thing to keep in mind is that this industry, we are a safe industry for our customers and for our employees. Coronavirus is not a foodborne illness. You're not going to get it from the food that you eat. It's from being back in public and being back in contact with other people. We have aggressive policies that we're putting in place for hygiene, for disinfecting, for making sure that our employees are safe and healthy. But it's going to be a lot of change. They're talking, some states are talking about you cannot just walk into a local bar and grill and get a table for four. You have to have a reservation. They want to minimize people that are waiting for those tables up front. There are going to be fewer tables in there. It's going to be a lot of change for all of us. We want to make sure we can serve our communities. We want to make sure we can still serve great meals, but people are going to have to adapt a little bit in the short term.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll admit, I was Googling during your response there, Sean, because I want, and you can't pick on any one industry, okay? But doggone it, the airline industry got $25 billion. Shouldn't we be looking at providing something for the restaurants out there? The answer is yes, because I got to get to this question. How concerned are you about getting the supplies that you need when we do get the green light?
It is a challenge. We want to make sure that's up there as well. Look, the people who are on the supply chain for us, they are just as important as the people on the front lines on the medical side and in hospitals now. If this food is not harvested, if it's not delivered in a safe way, in a timely way, we are going to have major issues, not only in restaurants, but in grocery stores.
Yep.
The National Restaurant Association, we are working with farm groups to make sure that they have the protections that they need and that they're given the tax treatments, because they deserve to be treated the same as first responders right now, because they are absolutely critical to our way of life in this country.
Sean, once again, we could have talked for twice the amount of time here. We really appreciate you giving us an update. We'll probably be leaning on you for another one again here in a couple of weeks.
We lean on you and your listeners as well. Anytime, Chip. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That's Sean Kennedy, VP, the National Restaurant Association.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us again is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, taking a look at what's going on in the grains. We had that May corn contract, front month contract, come within, a penny and three quarters of the 301 low that we posted last week.
Yeah, I think for now at least it's positive that is holding. But kind of like I talked about last week, it's probably temporary. Typically, the first test of long-term support, if it holds, it's probably not going to hold on the second attempt. So it's probably just a matter of time. Interestingly, we're seeing bear spreading in that market today with the new crop futures slightly firmer and the old crop slightly weaker.
Yeah. What's going on in soybeans? A little bit of pressure there.
Yeah, just struggling to get going here. I think that just a lack of fresh news. We need to see some Chinese demand, I think, come into the marketplace. That's something that the market's really striving for right now. And while we realize that most of it's going to be new crop, they just want to see some sort of positive news on the demand front.
All right. Big move in the lean hog market again.
Yeah, I thought that you were probably going to start there. Kind of caught me off guard there a little bit. But limit up, expanded limits of 550 today, and limit up in the summer month contracts. So the June, July, and August contracts are all trading at their limit. That June contract surged above the 38% retracement, so that would indicate that there's probably an extended correction likely to happen here. We'll see how far it can extend to the upside.
All right, we've got a little bit of strength going in the cattle complex today as well. Hey, just a heads up to everybody, Brian and Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson are going to be our guests for the full show this afternoon on AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
And don't forget, it is Farm On Week here at Farm Journal. We want to see what it looks like for you to farm on. Posted on Twitter, hashtag Farm On, one word, capital F, capital O-N. Or you can text a picture or a message of what it means for you to farm on to 31313. Just include Farm On in the message. And we're going to be talking with Lindsay Pullen at the end of the show about what it means for her and her family to farm on. Right now, we've got Tanner Emke with us. Tanner is the manager of the Knowledge Exchange Division at CoBank, and he's a friend of AgriTalk, been on the show several times. Tanner, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, Chip. Just kind of like everybody getting used to the working from home, and it's been a little interesting. I've got my at-home office assistant, 2 years old, running around drawing on markers and or drawing where the markers on things. So it's been interesting.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yep. No doubt. Well, that's got to be a lot of fun.
It is good to see her be at home more. So.
Yep. So we were just talking with Sean Kennedy from the National Restaurant Association about what it's going to look like when we get to a new normal and what it might feel like and what the flow is going to look like. And the last thing that we talked about is getting the product in place for those guys, Tanner. There's been a lot of discussion about the questions being asked. Is the supply chain broken because of what's happening at the slaughterhouses? This is without a doubt the biggest challenge that we've faced in the protein sector that I can remember.
It's unprecedented. Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that's rippling out through in the entire agricultural sector, Chip. It's not just livestock, but I'd say it is, as you pointed out, it's very acute for livestock with so many, with what, 30% of the pork processing capacity offline, so a lot of the beef capacity offline. There's concerns now of what's this going to look like down the road, especially when we have so much financial stress now with hog producers and livestock producers, because they've lost very important markets for their livestock. How do they get through this right now? And so, you know, USDA's got their $19 billion that they've pledged. And so that is going to be helpful. But when you look at some of these numbers, you start taking apart, Chip. I think that the pork industry is estimated to lose about $5 billion alone.
Yeah.
Based on what's going on right now. Well, 5 out of the 19, we've still got a lot of other sectors that are suffering here. We've got, obviously, beef. But look at what's going on in the dairy sector.
Yeah.
Milk prices have just completely fallen out of bed. Dairy producers were already stressed coming into this, and now they're having to dump milk for the same reasons, the loss of supply chain, loss of the food service sector. And so significant losses there on dairy. Obviously, what's been going on in ethanol, that's been talked about quite a bit, and how that's impacting corn prices and row crop producers. What's going on in specialty crops even? I mean, this is really unprecedented, where if you can't get workers to pick crops, or if you've lost very important food service contracts, now you got to let those crops rot in the field. So add up all of these production losses, Chip, and it is staggering. And so there's some questions whether this $19 billion from USDA is really going to be able to be the Band-Aid that agriculture really needs at this time.
Well, and especially looking at the individual farm rather than agriculture, looking at the individual farm, that $125,000 pay cap per commodity, $250 per enterprise. For when animals are involved in the operation, Tanner, that's not a lot of support.
Oh no, oh no. When you look at if you have an operation that has thousands of head of hog, for instance, heads of hog. I mean, you're talking about $125,000. I mean, that might cover some of the costs just for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Or, for instance, in row crop production, I mean, some farmers, for $125,000, that might cover their labor expense and their fuel bill for a few days.
Yeah.
I mean, the $125,000, that's a concern. But, yeah, I don't know anybody who's stressing who would turn that down.
Right.
But is it the solution that agriculture needs right now? I mean, it is what it is, but I don't think it's going to be the band. It's not going to be the bandage that ag really needs right now.
Right, right, exactly. Okay, so the supply chain. When we've got senators from Iowa, Ernst and Grassley, both saying, "Listen, we should maybe be looking at compensating these growers, the hog producers that are having to euthanize hogs." It obviously has turned into a worst case scenario for some producers out here, without question, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yes.
And you know, is that that's obviously not anything that any producer wants to do. What farmer would choose to euthanize their animals?
Right.
Or what farmer would choose to dump milk? These are very, very challenging times for farmers and ranchers. And you know, there's always the PR aspect. I mean, as you know, Chip, and as all your listeners know, most people are not directly tied to agriculture. And so understanding what's going on at this level can be difficult, trying to help people understand that the government is going to help farmers euthanize their animals. When you have some farmers who've been criticized openly for having to dump milk or euthanize animals, can you get government support to do that? I've heard of anecdotes of some producers receiving death threats for having dumped milk when you have food banks that are trying to get food.
Right.
So when you have that environment, it's always going to be very difficult. There's a lot of misunderstanding going on there, and but I would say this, Chip. this is not new to agriculture. Agriculture has always encountered difficult times. I mean, this is just it's normal. It is extraordinary. But this is not the first crisis farmers and ranchers have survived.
Exactly.
If there's anything that we know about U.S. agriculture, it is a very resilient industry. And, you know, we have to keep the long view through this crisis, Chip. There's mm-hmm. always opportunity in mm-hmm. crisis. Now, that may not seem the way a lot of people would like to view this. Obviously, we're talking about very stressed times for a lot of people. But on the other side of this, there may be some new opportunities, and I'll talk from my own perspective. I grew up on a wheat farm in western Kansas, Chip. And one thing that I find very gratifying is, you know what? People are baking bread again. Now I would hardly consider that a great opportunity, but these are things that we have to say, you know what? There may be opportunities here that we don't realize quite yet. Through this crisis.
No,
so we always have to keep that in mind.
You're exactly right, Tanner. How long has wheat's food use estimate been stuck at like 950 or 960 million bushels? It's been stuck there forever. Maybe a rediscovery of baking at home moves that needle a little bit, and every little bit will be helped. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, wheat farmers were experiencing an epidemic prior to this. It was the anti-gluten movement.
Yeah.
And maybe this may be the year where wheat comes back. So it could be a turning point perhaps for wheat. So it's those type of things where we may see opportunity that we didn't expect.
Right. Okay. What'd you make of the Tyson ad?
Well, that was interesting. And I think... based on all of the media reports out there of what's going on with supply chain disruptions and, you know, people not being able, you know, people going to the grocery stores and they're not seeing meat in the meat case.
Right.
I think this was clearly an attempt to try to reach the consumer and say, look, we have been deemed an essential industry. There is a reason why. The agricultural supply chain has to remain intact, and we need you, the consumer, to be a part of this, to be understanding of it. Because, as we talked about earlier, Chip, there's a lot of disconnect between farmers and consumers.
Right.
And so I think that was an attempt to try to at least communicate to the consumer, to communicate to legislators that this is a serious issue.
Yeah,
and it has
absolutely.
To be dealt with absolute sobriety. And so I think it was something that probably was needed. Who knows where that ends up? But I think that article that the CEO of Tyson ran in the New York Times, it was a paid advertisement.
Right.
I think that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
Just trying to reach the consumer at a level that they just don't understand.
Okay. I've only got about 45 seconds left for this. What about support for the ethanol industry, Tanner? How necessary?
Well, it's beyond necessary. It's critical. We've got an entire industry that's being upended right now. Nobody knows how long this is going to last, but we're talking about long-term impacts on an important supply chain. We're talking about fuel, okay? And when this is all over, are we going to have the infrastructure that we need? When this is over. And I would say that, is it going to happen? I'm not a Politico individual type of individual. I don't know what's going on in D.C., Chip, at that level. But I would say ethanol is clearly in crisis. And if we want to help middle America and the U.S. farmer and rancher, that's something that has to be considered, absolutely.
Tanner, thank you so much for your time, my friend. Take care out there. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Chip.
You bet. That is Tanner Emke. He is a manager of the Knowledge Exchange division at CoBank. We've got Lindsay Pullen up next. Farm on.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture farms on for our family and yours.
And we are telling some farm on stories this week on AgriTalk. I'm looking forward to these. Yesterday we heard from Bob Birdsall down in Northwest Missouri about how he is farming on. He and his family are farming on this spring. And now I want to talk with Lindsay Pullen. She is farming on with her family. Welcome to AgriTalk, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us about your operation.
Yeah, so I'm kind of involved in two things. My family owns a swine boar stud called Schaefer's Gold Rush, where we are still, selling, breeding hogs and making that happen. And then kind of the cutting edge thing that we are all a part of is Walton Webcasting, and we have started launching cyber livestock shows.
You're right. Right. I've seen some comments on this, Lindsay. This is fascinating. Now, you probably don't know this about me, but I grew up in 4-H. I loved showing livestock, hogs included, but primarily cattle is what I was showing. But doing this virtually, why are you doing it first? Let's go to that. Yeah. Why are we doing the virtual livestock shows?
Yeah, well, I think what you said there is there's a passion that underlies in a lot of farm families across the nation. And obviously through these times, these livestock shows have been shut down due to social distancing. And, you know, we're all respectful of that, but we are, as you said, farming on. And we want to push forward and give these kids an opportunity. Many of our youth that show livestock, they actually don't grow up on a family farm. And so this is their connection to agricultural education in the agricultural world. And so it has allowed us to bring these kids together on a virtual cyber platform for them to live out their passion and learn along the way.
Okay. I want to find out how the kids are reacting to it. But first, tell me this. How are the judges reacting to this, Lindsay? Are they jumping in and doing it?
Yes. So the first test run we had, our judge came in and he's like, I'm just doing this for you guys here. I don't know how this is going to go. And by the end of it, he was raving like, this is the best thing. This is great. And obviously a judge wants to see an animal in person, but this is the next best thing that we have. And the kids are doing a fantastic job sending us quality videos where we can truly study the livestock as if we were there.
Now, along with judging the animals at so many of these livestock shows, we're also judging showmanship and how that animal, or excuse me, how the exhibitor is handling the animal and so on. Is that still part of what's happening at the shows?
Yes. So we don't have a specific showmanship division, but what we have had is we have our commentators selecting a top four, what we call elite showmen, over each show that we do, because we know that that's really where kids grow and learn from. And also because we are putting this out cyberly, we want to also practice great animal husbandry, and we think that promotes that as well.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Lindsay, let's talk a little bit more about your boar stud operation, because, boy, the challenges that the hog industry is facing right now, really tough. How's things holding up on that end?
You know, one thing, God has made us farmers kind of optimistic folk.
Yeah.
So it is going well. I wouldn't say things are booming. But honestly, for boar stud that I have is for show pig operation. And what we see is that breeders have a vision that we have to keep breeding, and we have to keep our sights set on the future. So we have a project for these kids to keep growing with.
Right, right. So obviously the way that the animals are being exhibited, that is one way that COVID-19 has changed your operation. But here we are. We're looking at what is going to be a new normal in America. How's that? Can we get back to large gatherings and large livestock exhibits again, do you think?
I think we will. I don't think it's going to be something that we're going to jump right into. I think it's something that we're going to ease into, and we're going to have to practice. I mean, the swine industry, we have been practicing biosecurity for years, right. You know, sanitizing, shower in, shower out. You know, we have been practicing that for a long time. So this idea isn't totally foreign to us. And so as far as just, you know, washing our hands, keeping a social distance from each other. And I think the hardest thing will be breaking the handshake for a little while. But other than that, I think we will slowly jump back in. And, you know, we're resilient, and it will happen again.
Yeah, we've got an opportunity to be a leader. The agricultural community has an opportunity to be a leader in how we do get back to work. Because we are working through this and we are following guidelines, we can be an example to workers in urban areas about how you can do this and do this safely, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what some forget is agriculture is huge in technology. And technology is going to be a great factor for us to move forward. And I agree, we need to be leaders and positive, you know, and we just got to set that example that we are pushing forward. And we're doing it respectfully. Farmers want to take care of our neighbors. That is just in our nature to do. And awesome. So we're going to make sure that everybody's fed, but we're going to make sure that everybody's fed and taken care of safely.
That's awesome. Lindsay, if I want to follow along with some of these virtual livestock shows, how can I do that?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Just go to waltonwebcasting.com, and that will be played right up on our front screen player right there. So waltonwebcasting.com.
Waltonwebcasting.com, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Yep. Livestock like you've never seen before.
I love it. Love it. Lindsay, hey, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for farming on, and thank you for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you for reaching out. I appreciate the message you guys are sending.
Thank you so much. That is Lindsay Pullen. Wow. That's exciting stuff right there. They are farming on and making sure that the kids can get to farm on and continue their ag education as well. All right. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Pro Farmers, Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson will be my guests. And tomorrow morning, we got a farmer forum going with Tim from Iowa and Michelle from Montana right here on AgriTalk.